Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody, and happy Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of Indeed. It's the Independent Wrestling Podcast. I'm Mike here, as always, with my wonderful co-host, Righteous Reg, to talk some independent wrestling with your favorite faces from around the world of independent wrestling. How are you doing today, Reg? You are muted.
Been there.
Hey.
Am I muted? Am I alive? Am I here?
You're alive.
You're alive.
Hey, it's me. It's Righteous Reg, your favorite writer, your favorite rapper, your favorite podcaster here. Independent wrestling. This one's a really good one, I think, today, Mike. We've had some very special guests the last couple of weeks, but today we have someone that is a little bit deeper into some things that we like here on Indeed. And so I'm very excited to talk to our guest here today.
Absolutely. And hey, it's okay. We're here to talk to you and not Coda, although we love Coda.
We love them views, though.
Our guest today has has many names: the Death Fighter, the MLW middleweight and tag champion, your dream waifu, Maid Kira.
Oh God, yeah, that's a new one.
We do have Akira here with us, and thank you for making it here. The internet told me Speedball Mike Bailey broke your back, so it's a miracle that you're alive and moving and sitting up here.
You're alive. You're upwards. You're not in a hospital bed permanently.
Yeah,
I want to be perfectly honest. Like, my back, we've all seen me do a German suplex. Like, my back bends that way. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Literally 3 days later, people were asking me if I was hurting. I woke up, and I just... you just stretch your legs, you stretch your arms out. As I stretched my legs, all you heard is this, and I just go, oh! And Masha goes, here's the thing. She goes, what? And I go, my leg. And not from the match, not from anything, from waking up and stretching, exactly. I couldn't walk for a week and a half.
Yo.
That's my life. I don't get hurt in matches unless it's, this, when you get your face cut open. But, literally, the only time I've ever heard is something dumb at home or in the gym, just a little minor injury that I have to deal with for like a month. Definitely thinking about that is just that I still get tagged. I'm going to get tagged in that clip from that match forever. I just
1,000%. Yeah, it's forever.
Absolutely. So like
that match, it's either that or the Matrix spot that happened in that match. Everyone was like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's one of those two, but we all know the double knees is what everyone's going to be talking about forever.
Yeah, but like that's not even the first time. Like, you've had a few moments from your matches go viral, like for various reasons. And the exposure is always great, and the discourse is usually stupid. But like
my favorite was at Prestige, when it was either me popping out of the box, Metal Gear Solid style, or when I had Sonico and I charged at the Rome camp, stopped, and I lariated him. And Lee Moriarty did some like 90s family sitcom music over it. And it was just, I was like, that's perfect. That's been my favorite viral moment. People will think the roof jump maybe with the lights. I'm like, no. It's the lariat, because it was a total 90s sitcom. And it was, I watch it, like, it's so funny.
Yeah, no, the silly ones are way better. When people like the ones that people can like grab shit, add effects to and stuff like that. Oh, like, That's where the true memery comes out.
Well, it's the memery, but it's also it's a reflection of your character. Because a lot, like, you'll see guys do a move, like a really crazy move, and it's like, that's cool. But it doesn't really go outside of wrestling, except for, like, some crazy Ninja Mac thing. Mm-hmm. Where you watch that and you go, how? Or Vikingo, you go, ow. Like, I watch Vikingo, and my body hurts just by watching him. My knees hurt by proxy. I was I was standing with, I think I was standing next to like Nick Gage or somebody. I was just talking. I was like, you know, I watched Vikingo. My knees hurt. He goes, me too, dude.
Yeah.
But I like the ones with where it's the character. It's the little character. That's why, like, why Danhausen got so big to me, I think, was because he just had a character outside of wrestling that people just liked. And he just did really interesting things that people can clip and just share everywhere. Warhorse, you know, like all those guys. And I'm in that weird line of where I'm not really overtly a character, you know, like some guys are. I like to think I'm a little bit more like nuanced. I'm not so much as like, you know, a 90s cartoon, but nowadays I can kind of say I'm probably like a 2009 anime, especially now with the maid thing. Like I can't say I'm not a gimmick character now with that. I go, like someone said I should have a Titantron where it's me, but I go through a whole magical girl sequence and I go, are you gonna pay for this? And they're like, I might. And I said, if you pay for it, I'll do it. It's fine.
Right.
Yo, I'm sure we could crowdfund that. Like, we'll just clip this. We'll keep retweeting it. But we could probably make
a lot of people are gonna be interested in that for sure.
Yeah. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Because like the whole maid thing is just like it's something it was something for my Twitch fans, but it's something I kind of wanted to do for the more feminine side of me. I wanted to embrace that because people thought I'd do it with a beard, like Lady Beard from Japan, mm-hmm. and you know, in that band. And I was like, no. I'm gonna come out of this looking so pretty. Y'all are gonna be fucking confused. And literally, like I saw Effie on Sunday, and Effie was just like, how does it feel to be so pretty if you're a man or a woman? And I go, bitch, I feel great. Killer Kelly walked up to me and it was just like. Because she's like, when we were in Germany, she jokingly became my adopted mom. And she just looked at me. She's like, I don't know what to think of you. She's like, you're about as pretty as I am. And I go, that's so good. Masha's mom didn't even recognize me. That's the best part.
That's awesome.
So I got all fixed up. And she was talking to her mom about something. And her mom sees me. And she goes, Mom, look. And she stops and goes, who's that girl? And I'm like, when? And then I go, yo. And she's like, Akira, and I'm like, hi. Mm-hmm. And she just laughed. She's like, you look good. And I didn't expect this dainty little Russian woman to say I look good. And I'm like, yeah, it's a win.
There you go. You've ascended to can fool your in-laws pretty.
Oh yeah. I'm trying to be like Effie, and I'm trying to hit like low tier sex god levels, and that's just kind of what I'm pushing nowadays. Right. I got the earrings and the nose piercing. I got everything. Let's go.
Like this, when you did your maid Kira stream the other day, they're like, that stream popped the fuck off. Like they were the chat in the waiting screen was mm-hmm. like busy as hell.
I went from having like maybe 12 to 15 viewers. So like when I started this year, I was hitting, you know, 8 to 10 consistently. But when I started being much more focused and focusing on presentation, much more chat involvement as well, I was hitting around like 12 to 15, you know, like if I don't really announce my streams, people just know in my Discord that my moderators go, he's going to stream when he wants to stream. Just be ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pop up with like 12 to 15 people. It doesn't matter what game I'm playing, but if I'm playing like Civilization, I'm getting up to 20. But when I was doing the mage stream, and once again, I know it's not going to be like an overnight boom success thing, but I got up to like 30, 35 people consistently for like 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And considering I streamed for 13 hours, and by the end of the stream, I was still like 19 to like 18. I'm like, that ain't bad. And I incentivize it now just because like, doing the feminine stuff is like a part of like me for me personally. And it's a good representation for myself. And it's a good representation for, you know, people that are LGBTQ. But I'm also like, y'all ain't going to get it. Just like, I'm not going to panhandle that to you. So I said, right. I'm like, so now I'm like, every 250 followers, you guys get a stream. And I told them the next one is going to be Magical Girl. So they got really excited for that one. And I said, it's going to be shark powered Magical Girl. And people were like, my moderators were like already planning stuff for that stream. They're like, we're on it. Let's go.
Yeah.
It turned into its own thing, like merchandising character stuff. People asked if I'll wrestle as the Death Maid. And I go, yeah. Like, why wouldn't I? Like,
right.
It's fun. It'll be a different character with kind of the same things, some same things as Akira, but it's also different. Like, her name is Kira. She does her own thing. Oh, also, what was it? Paro. I was talking to Paro, and Paro's like, yeah, my husband saw it. And he's like, holy shit, he looks really good. He looks like he's doing like drag professionally. And I'm like,
perfect.
I'm getting compliments from all sides of the aisle. But when you get the crazy deathmatch fans going, I have the most confused boner right now. I go, that's the point. And I thought people were gonna like crap on this. You guys know those Facebook deathmatch groups are insane. They're filled with crazy people.
Yes.
And I'm tapped out of the deathmatch scene just because I don't need to deal with that. I don't talk about XPW. I don't talk about anything. I focus on wrestling that I like, people that I like. And that's what I want to be. I don't want to cycle that kind of negativity. Like, but there was maybe one person who said something and everyone else was just like, shut up. Like, he actually looks really great and he can kill all of us. And I'm like, you get it. You guys understand.
Absolutely. And yeah, so where was I going to go here?
I talk a lot. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect.
No, it's okay. But yeah, you know, you said like you're having fun with it and kind of just embracing all sides of yourself. And it kind of takes me back to earlier in this year, you did IWTV The Life Of.
Yes.
And there was this moment in it, you had a monologue in your car and you made a lot of statements. And I think your current successes are really reflecting what you said there. So I kind of want to get some of your insight on that. Like, you talked about investing free time into yourself. So, you know, what kind of work have you been putting in on yourself, and how are you finding that to be paying off?
Where I came from, I came from the middle of nowhere in Indiana. My mom was a Korean immigrant, and she Korean Japanese, you know, that the whole background of there is so muddy, and the history is so kind of messed up. I really don't bring it up. I go, listen, this is what it is. Other people understand, like other Asians go, we understand, we know what you're talking about. I go, cool. But my mom and my dad were very limiting in things that I wanted to do, the things I wanted to be, that kind of thing. Like, I wanted to do jujitsu, I wanted to do taekwondo, that kind of stuff. My dad was like, yeah, my dad's like standard 6'4" white American. He had a mullet in the 90s, the whole nine yards. But they're like, no, you're going to play football. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And all of my life, I kind of just listened to what people said I'm going to do or what I should do. And I just, you know, that was the barometer of my life, was listen to other people. You don't have free will, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I went to college. I didn't go to college for things that I wanted to do because my parents were like, we're paying for it, so you have to do what we want. That whole spiel. I graduated college, and it's only because I went to the college that they wanted me to that I made the friends that got me back into wrestling. So by proxy, it worked out for me. But I went through life. I was working like in factories and whatnot, and I hated my life. Like, I had carpal tunnel in both hands, so I'd wake up every morning and my hands would be like this. And every morning I had to flex and get functionality back, and I was just in pain for months, more pain than I've ever been in wrestling, which sounds crazy, but it's true. Like, factory work is the worst, especially when they don't care about you. But it goes towards what happened this year where I decided I'm going to do things that I wanted to do. Where I was like, I want to be a wrestler. I wasn't really allowed to do that. My parents were going to support me, but I said, I'm going to do it. And I did it. I paid for the training on my own. I drove 3.5 hours one way, slept in my trainer's bed. And by on my trainer's bed, I mean at the foot of his bed, because the rest of the house was so gross. And I'd go back and forth every weekend, 3.5 hours. I'd stay at his place just so I could train. And people will say, that's kind of sucks. I said, no, I'm happy, because I did all of that to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And this is the year where, I would still listen to promoters, you know, you get the promoters in your ear saying, no, you need to do this, you need to do that. And that's why I always admire Effie for, because Effie has always been very, I'm going to do what I want. Like, I am the product. I'm the commodity. You want to use me. Right.
Right.
Like, it's not, you have power over me. It's, I'm giving you the fan base. I'm giving you your money. People pay to see me. They don't pay to see you. They don't pay to see you book. And this was the year where I truly decided, you know what? I don't need to be chained down to these places. I don't need to be chained down to other people's opinions of me or what they think I should be doing. Like, I bet a bunch of people would be like, if I told them about the maid thing, they'd be like, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But now people want to see me wrestle as the maid. Literally, Effie saw me and Effie said, what you're doing is so smart. He's like, it's you, it's personal, it's real. But in terms of marketing, it's so good.
Mm.
And I'm doing that with just myself. Like, people were saying, don't sign with MLW. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. Because I went to them. I told them what I wanted, what I'm going to do. And we discussed it. And I've been having a great time there. I said, I'm going to go. People are saying, oh, don't try to go to Japan without us because, you know, we're in this together. And I'm like, no. We're not in this together. I am my own separate brand. I am my own separate entity. I'm not tying myself down. I'm not being loyal to people who don't pay me enough to be loyal. And people, again, were like, what are all that we've done for you? And I'm like, there's a lot that you've done for me, but there's a lot that you've done that have really, like, just brought me down. And, like, the past year and a half, I did not like wrestling. I'll even outright say it. When I wrestled G-Raver at GCW, I didn't know he was high on meth, and I put my life in his hands, and I had probably one of the worst matches I've ever had. It went on too long. I was so confused because I didn't know what was happening because – I didn't know he was high. I thought he was upset because our friend died. When Marcus Crane died, I was fucked up. Everybody in that back was crying and fucked up. And I let it go because I said, you know what? He's probably just sad. Then I find out by proxy, no, he was high as shit. He's been high as shit. And I let that man drop me off like a 20-foot ladder onto another ladder with light tubes. That sounds absolutely insane out of pocket.
That's crazy.
And I forgave him before that. And I said, you know what? I'm tired of just forgiving for people for crap. I always put my best foot forward 100%. I'd give my heart out. And that match messed up a lot of things for me, and it messed with my head. The past year and a half, I'd had good matches, but I was never, like, proud, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had to get to the point where I had the match with Tremont where I cut the promo where Sean died, you know? And I just said, you know what? I'm going to try to cleanse myself of it. I need to change in my heart because I'm not happy. I'm not this kid that everyone calls me kid. And I'm like, I'm turning 30 years old. I travel the world. I pay my bills. You know, a lot of you people still live at home with your parents. No doubt. No knock on that. But don't call me kid. I'm sick of it. Like, I'm doing more things than a lot of people are in wrestling. And I'm not bragging about it. I'm just happy to say that I am. Because not a lot of people have the ability to do so. But don't call me kid. Because it takes a lot to be doing. It takes a lot to live in New York, for God's sakes. Like, it's a crazy place. I never thought I'd be there. But at that moment is when I decided I'm going to do things for me. I had to find a way to cleanse my spirit. Because, you know, we always talk about fighting spirit in wrestling. My fighting spirit was tainted. The taint of that match haunted me. Because forever I thought I'm not as good as people thought I was. And now I went and had that match with Speedball. And when I went to have that match, I would say I had to get this monkey off my back, which is a double entendre. Yes, of course, it means his song, Brass Monkey. But it was the literal. It was the
and then he monkey. Was actually on your back when he tried to break it.
It was okay. Triple entendre.
Yeah.
How dare you?
It's like an onion. There's just layers.
But I think about it this way. He did that double knees on my back. But that match is probably one of the best matches this year, and I will happily say that.
Definitely.
But that, when he did that double knees, I felt happy about wrestling again.
Yeah.
I was telling you before, I said Speedball is going to be the match that cleanses my soul again, and I feel good about myself again. Because even at MLW, I'd have pretty good matches. You know, it's fun, and everyone likes me. Everyone says I'm doing great. You know, in terms of being a character on screen, working with cameras, working with everybody. They're like, you're getting better and better and better. But after I had that match with Speedball, I finally feel like I'm in the element again.
Yes.
Like when Alec Price comes out, he's Alec Price, you know, he's fucking loud. He's in the zone. When I came out for this last MLW tapings, I felt in the zone again. And I haven't felt in the zone for a long time. Even at Circle Six, I felt in the zone. I felt like I felt like, you know, my idol. I felt like one of my heroes, which I don't have heroes much anymore. I believe heroes are just a target for me to conquer. Mm-hmm. But Alex Colon was, you know, Mr. Three-peat. Mm-hmm. He was the G. He was the tournament guy. I came out at that Circle Six tournament spitting, being honest about who I was, calling motherfuckers who they were, and feeling good about it.
Sure did.
But I came out of that as the tournament guy. I watched that tournament back and I said, none of you motherfuckers can touch me.
Yep.
And it all started from that, when I said that from Tremont. I decided to change my name. I decided to change everything. And I finally hit that evolution that I needed to hit. And I've been walking out, like people have been saying like something is changing you again, and it's good. And it's just in time, because now I'm going to Japan and I'm going to face Masashi Takeda, the guy in death matches. But also, as everyone has been saying for the past 3 years, he's the Eastern counterpart to me. Like, I look in the mirror, I see a little bit of him, and I bet money when he looks at me, he sees a little bit of me. It's literally like two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, what about the scissors? What about the pigeon spikes? And once again, I like to think I'm a regular, normal human being. But when I said that, I go, let's go.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever seen Ishikawa versus Takeda from, like, what was it, 2014, the BJW Deathmatch Championship, Ishikawa headbutts the living piss out of Takeda. And if anybody knows me, I love to headbutt people just like that. I'm going to knock him back to 2014. Because I'm sorry, nobody in my generation has pushed him that far. Drew Parker has, but Drew Parker also came before us. Drew Parker was doing his stuff in BJW, you know, before the current crop of deathmatch guys. He's been doing it longer. It's just the truth of it. I'm talking my generation. And a lot of my generation that came out in 2020 and 2021, they either shot themselves in the foot, canceled themselves, or just turned out to be giant pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And I'm also done tying myself down to pieces of shit. I don't vouch for people anymore. I have to know you.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, one of the few people I can say that about is probably people like Kid Bandit. Who people will say shit about Kid Bandit, but I go, you know what? At the end of the day, I know Kid Bandit's a good fucking person. At the end of the day, I know people like Effie are good people. I can't say the same for a lot of you. I've changed so much as a person this year alone. And I don't feel it until we have a conversation about it like this. Or when I was at a show, was like a week and a half ago. And it was just a conversation about like a past relationship that I had and about my feelings. And we were just talking. But when they stopped, they looked at me and go, you've changed a lot in 4 years. And I said, hopefully for the good. And he goes, very for the good. He's like, you're not, you know, loud and outspoken just to be loud and outspoken. He's like, you're very methodical and you're very well spoken. Mm-hmm. And people don't think that about you until you speak. And I said, well, we're only here in this world to grow and be good to people. Like, I'm never not going to try to be a good person to people. I may not trust people as much anymore because pro wrestling makes you not trust people because people are crazy.
Yeah.
But I can still say at the end of the day, I still put my best foot forward to help people when I can. I'm never not going to say no to helping someone if they ask or talking to someone. Unless, you know, they're absolute. It's outright knowledgeable that they're dirt bags. And I'm like, yeah, brother, I don't know. I don't know, man.
selective about. Yeah, it's like, yeah, so, you know.
Maybe go ask him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the help your friends, help your peers and stuff, but like also selectively, like the ones that are worth helping and giving that.
Mm-hmm. I've matured on a personal and professional level that I don't think people are ready for, especially when it comes to financially. People think I'm just, you know, spending money. I'm like, no, I don't want to spend money. I'm not cutting you a deal because you knew me 5 years ago. I'm like, I am here to make money. I'm here to retire one day. And people look at me a little different. I said, listen, I don't knock people that are doing this for their fun. Like, I remember you guys know, like, Brutal Bob Evans.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a seminar with his in my first year. And he said, there is nothing wrong with being a 40-miler. There's nothing wrong with it. Own it. But don't knock people who are actively going out and working hard and asking for money because they've earned it. but also vice versa, don't knock the 40 miler who's happy doing just that. They want to wrestle once or twice on the weekend, or maybe once a month, and they're happy. And so when I tell people that, I tell people, I'm like, listen, I'm here to make money. I'm here. I want to retire one day. I don't want to just say I'm retired, take my boots off in the middle of a ring with 40 people, you know, and there's people that do it and, you know, kudos to you. But, you know, as Matt, you guys know Madman Pondo always says, you didn't retire, you just quit. You're retired. You're retired when you have money in your bank deposit from wrestling, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, if Becky Lynch just quits tomorrow, she retired.
Yes.
Yes.
If Joe Schmoe down the street and in Brooklyn takes his boots off in front of 20 people, he just quit. It's not the same thing. I would like to say one day I retired. Toshiaki Kawada retired. You know, it's that difference. There's always that weird disconnect of people in wrestling, promoters, wrestlers, whoever, they're very sensitive to the fact that some people just want to make money, and some people aren't just going to put up with the dramatics of the game. Like, wrestling's a circus, we all know, but sometimes we make it a circus. Other wrestlers, other promoters, other people, sponsors just make it a circus. And on a professional level, I can safely say when people try to make it a circus for me, I go, don't care, done, bye. Because we don't have to. Like, you guys and myself, we're all independent. We're independent contractors. You know, even some of the MLW, I could probably just be like, I don't want to do that. And they'll listen to me. It's crazy. I've heard so many things about, you know, the culture in this area, but things have changed. Like, we're doing a joint show with New Japan coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And because I talk to people, I invested in myself. I sat there and emailed back and forth with people in the office regarding it, about what they were doing with me, what I wanted to do, about my background. I got what I wanted out of it. And people are still shocked that, you know, I'm getting the things that I'm getting. And I'm like, I asked. Like, they said, hey, you can't do this. You can't work for this certain company. I said, yes, I can. Here's the exact reasons why I can. And they go, okay, yeah, you can, because that makes sense. And I go, see, it's not that hard. This isn't a knock on people who are younger either, because I had to go through life. I had to work at a factory and understand business. And I had to shack up with a crazy Russian to get to this level of thinking. But a lot of it come with the kid mentality of, oh, paper, sign paper. Oh, wow, I'm not happy now. And it's like, you're a business. You know, I do stuff at the Fallout Shelter. I'm technically a coach. And I say, and I'm like, you are a business. You represent yourself. The merchandise you put out, the theme music that you use, the way you interact on social media, it all adds up to the representation of your business. It's not just you're a wrestler. It's you are everything if you're trying to be something out of this. That's the reason why the Young Bucks are, you know, multimillionaires before a major company. I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, it's crazy that it took this year changed to the point where I'm having this kind of conversation with people about business. Like, I was sitting there talking with Effie about merchandising on Sunday, and I'm like, me a year ago would be like t-shirts, that's it, you know. And which I went to college for corporate and marketing relations, but I never really thought about it on a intricate level like that. We were having conversations about merchandising, production, where things get produced. And I'm just like, when you talk to people who are really doing something and are actually profiting, it clicks in your brain on a higher level. And you're like, God, this is the most stimulating conversation ever. And I'm sorry, not a lot of a lot of the people in this area and in pro wrestling, a lot of them are kind of our kids. So they're not going to have that. Which, when I first started, I was 25. So I was still pretty much a kid. But now I'm like, I'm around all these other kids, all these actual children. And I'm like, huh, I'm talking with adults now. And I feel like an adult and I feel old.
Very true. Really Very true. You talked about MLW. Please talk to us about working with Raven. I'm just so interested on how it is to work with Raven.
So Raven is literally like the crazy uncle that you like to see at family reunions. So obviously, like, he's really cool. If he fucks with you, He's really cool with you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how he was going to perceive me, but he's like, he told me like in the first day, he's like, you have a cool look. You're eager. You're willing to learn. You listen. He's like, you already have all the tools. He's like, your body is going to get better. Your work's going to get better. And he's like, and your work's not bad already. And I'm like, okay. And this was like in January, February, whenever he debuted. But like, it's sitting with him when he's there, it's like sitting there with that uncle, you know, you just sit there and you just talk. He tells jokes. Sometimes they're corny. You laugh. But he's also very, very, very – we all know he's very wise. Mm-hmm. We all know he's wise. But we also know that, you know, he's been put through the ringer in wrestling, you know. But you can see him when he has a really smart idea and he's sitting there and he's looking up. Not to ignore you, but he's grasping that idea that he's going to give you. And he's going to tell you, and you're going to go, oh, shit, that's so smart. Because, once again, he's been hitting the head a lot. I mean, I've been hitting the head a lot. But so I understand, like, it's – he's one of the smartest guys, but he's got to be patient with him because when he's thinking, it takes some time. And when he does get that idea for you, you're going to feel like, oh, my God, this is what's going to get me the next level. In terms of promos, like, we sat there and we cut promos in the back. And, like – once again, we've all seen my work. I've always been more of a work rate guy. I've never been much of a promo guy. This year's kind of changed that because I've been cutting promos. People go, that was really good. And I go, thanks, Raven. Like, literally, thanks, Raven, and thanks, RSP. Because I went into MLW knowing I have to cut a promo. And I'm eloquent. I know I can talk. But it's different in terms of illustrating that in a professional wrestling sense.
Right.
That's like when you listen to CM Punk talk. CM Punk has a cadence and a way of – he's not just blurting out a ton of information. He slows down. He gives stops where people can stop and think onto his words. You know, like, love him or hate him, when he came back to Collision, tell me when I'm lying. That was, like, the key phrase of the entire thing. But he's – tell me when I'm telling lies. And it sticks in your head.
Yep.
And I realized, too, by listening to him and Ricky talk, like, I don't like hokey pro wrestling promos. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's not anything against them, you know, but I don't like cutting them because I feel gross when I cut them. I feel like a 80s corporate tool, and I'm like, ugh, what the fuck? But when you listen to guys like Kingston talk, you know, when you listen to guys like Bret Hart talk, people will say stuff about Bret Hart's promo work, but when Bret Hart talked, it felt real. It didn't feel like fake. You know, when Mox talks, you know, and the interlap between that guy and I is going to haunt me for the rest of my freaking career. Shut up.
He wore that thing on TV just, and everything.
Well, mm-hmm. it's just like when Masada went crazy this like past week, he went after two people. He went after Mox and he went after me. And I'm sitting here, I'm doing this. And I think Mox was just like, just don't interact with him. I go, why is it always us two? It's always the most insane shit. It's us two. And she just laughs and goes, I don't know. And I go, like, I wish, I'm like, when I'm dead, I'm going to talk to God and be like, listen, we need to talk. This shit's corny. But
you were playing some jokes, sir.
Yeah. I was like, the interlap here is hilarious. But so when I started cutting promos, I still do it now. Like, I'll cut one promo like first, and I'm like, all right, hold on, pause. I'll stop, and I'll think. Just be real.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, so I think the biggest compliment I've ever gotten from Raven, you know, he said, you know, he's like, dude, you're improving. You look like a star. But when he said, I cut a promo, and he goes, that was so eloquent. I was like, tapped out. I'm done. Anyone who said I was never a promo guy, fuck you. But now I go in and I cut promos in like a minute. Like, I'm in and out. You know, it doesn't take me 40 tries. You put me in front of a live audience, that's where you get the Tremont promo. You know, where I'm off the cuff and I'm going. And I'm understanding more and more how to be that guy to talk in front of a live studio audience. So talk, you know, in front of a camera, because that's what's going to get you. Like, I can have the most brutal matches, which I do, without deathmatch, without weapons or with weapons, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to make you uncomfortable. That's what I live to do. But the promos and Mancer's, you know, if you talk to Mancer, Mancer's always talking about promos. But I understand now what he means, because the promos get you to that next level of investment. Because then when you cut the promo, they're already there for the match if they believe it and they care. Like when I cut that stuff about Tremont after the Tremont match, people were shocked. And I was so happy to hear that people were so conflicted. They were like, that was so good. Did he turn heel? What was that? That's what I want to hear from people. I want people to be lost in the sauce, if you will, of pro wrestling. And I'm finding that niche, because when it's like when Eddie Kingston cuts a promo, you're like, God, I think he hates that dude.
Right.
When he's cutting the Punk promos, you were like, he hates that dude.
Mm-hmm. It makes it believe his words. Like,
or him and Mox when they were going back and forth and spitting fire, I was like, that's the kind of guy I want to be. And that's because of Raven. Because Raven had this very had and still does have this very, because he still cuts a great promo. Once he gets in pocket, he goes. Mm-hmm. But he has this way of mixing that old 80s and 90s hokey BS, but mixing it with that 90s, 2000s realness. Whereas now guys like Kingston and Punk and Mox, Homicide, all these guys, they're more not on the hokey side. They're just straight up, you know, I'm just talking shit to you. Right. Like, we hate each other. And I'm safe to say I'm happier to be on that side. I don't want to cut promos exactly like Raven, because once again, Raven was in that perfect middle of 80s and 90s guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had that 90s character that people are like, that's real. But he also was a funny 80s. He'd do some hokey and silly shit. But that's what was so great about him at that time, because no one else was doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to say that because of him and being around him and his influence, I cut promos that like that. Like that, the promo I cut for when when Masha challenged me for Courage Pro, you know, I cut that promo, and the guy who filmed it looked stopped. He goes, damn, that was good. And I go, that it's almost like when people say your match was great, you're like, it's that same level of influential pride. You're like, oh, God, yeah, I'm feeling good about myself. Because once again, not many guys can cut a good promo. It's, I'm this person. I don't like you. I'm going to see you at this date at Prestige or some whatever place on this date. And I'm like, I'm not going to cut promos for every freaking match, because I also believe, you know, if you can overstay your welcome and you can give too much.
True.
But when the matches matter and you cut the promo or you do the crazy move that people don't see you do, it makes people much more surprised by it. Like when I pull out, like when I wrestled Dale Patrick's in Chicago and I pulled out Manami Toyo's star drop move, and I was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I can do it. I just don't want to do it often because I really don't trust people to do it. Mm-hmm. Or when I was with Cologne at NGI and I did the reverse Frankensteiner, people were amazed that I did it. And I'm like, I could do all these things. I just, it's not really what I want to do. That's not how I want to present. But when I do it, it's going to catch your attention. I think you always hear that phrase from like veteran wrestlers of slow down, do less. And I'm understanding why, because you do less so that when you do a little bit more, people are really shocked by it. It's almost like it's like when you're a bad boyfriend or a bad girlfriend, you set the bar so low so that when you go a little bit above it, they're like, baby, that's amazing. I love you. And you're like, yeah. With John Cena, you know, that clip of John Cena doing the suicide dive this week. They're like, that man just pulled out a suicide dive or a Rana. It's like, so he knows, he lets you know that he can do it, but then he doesn't have to do it ever again. Mm-hmm. And it mattered because he was in the hottest program with CM Punk. Why wouldn't you? It's your most hated opponent. Pull out all the stops.
Do that in your wrestling. Don't do that in your relationship, though. That's called weaponized incompetence.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do a reverse Frankensteiner to your loved ones, please.
No, no, no. Please do not.
Also that. Yes.
Don't try this at home.
Especially not that.
Don't eat light tubes and spit it in your girlfriend's face.
No.
Which
no.
I think I've actually done.
But, yes,
in a wrestling ring. I got paid.
Unless you and your girlfriend are booked in a death match against each other, in which case, then it's like, you know.
Have at it.
You're both just at the office.
Exactly. Put skewers in their head.
It's exactly that, yeah. But one off on a tangent, but that's Raven. Raven rules. When he's around, you learn something. If you shut up and listen, if he's just telling a story, you can glean something from it. I plead to people, go watch, what was it, his Ring of Honor shoot video that he did. Mm-hmm. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours. When I first started wrestling, I listened to that religiously, and now 5 years later I truly understand it. But also, me when I was 5 years old watching ECW, watching Raven, I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah. From there to where you are now, it's pretty crazy, ain't it?
Yeah, from being the middle of nowhere in Indiana, Delphi, Indiana, which is where Dick the Bruiser is from, to watching ECW tapes, to being here and being like one of Raven's proteges is why it's insane to me. My dad got back into wrestling because of me, and he's like, "Your team with Raven, that's so cool. What the hell?"
Right.
That's gotta be an awesome.
Oh, it's, yeah. I think my dad finally understood. He's like, "Okay, my kid's actually, you know, doing something with this wrestling stuff." Like, I just told him today, I was like, "Hey, I'm flying to Japan tomorrow." And he goes, My dad was like, "Oh, good, have fun." He's like, right. He was surprised.
Yeah.
Oops.
Everything's okay. Everything's
all right.
Yeah. But yeah, there's that. Like, Dewey just food me.
Shout out to Raven.
Yeah. when you're seeing the others, is like, did you eat this food me?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't remember.
Sorry, can't talk right now. Doing a podcast.
Can't talk. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you guys hear the sharpening of a knife, you know why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dan, did you do the ate someone's lunch out of the office fridge, but at home with roommates?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit.
It'd be like that. It'd be Look, like I, that.
I'm not in court. I don't have to say yes or no.
True.
Right. Look,
what are you, a cop?
Look,
hey, cap, bro.
For 40, it's the 48-hour rule. If it's been there for 40, it's fair game after 48 hours.
Oh.
Hey, there you go. No, Megabyte Ronnie tweeted about it earlier today. It's like, you know, at what point is it like okay to eat my partner's leftovers? And it's like,
you can't leave food in Megabyte Ronnie's refrigerator. That's your first rule.
But like,
well, that man just eats. That man's built like a brick shit house. It's
right.
It's the 48-hour rule. Like, if you put something in the fridge that, you know, with the expectation of no one else eating it, and it's there for more than 2 days, then, like, you didn't prioritize it well enough for me to respect leaving it alone. I'm sorry.
Like, I'm still probably going to die, but thank you. Thank you for the kind words.
it's okay. Look, me, Reg, and everyone who's watching this will know what happened, so you got plenty of witnesses, you're good.
I got incriminating evidence.
I hope that last meal was worth it, Akira. I hope it was worth it.
Yeah, it was. It was Popeyes. It's always
worth it. Okay. Yeah. No, it's right. Okay. There you go. That's all you had to
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
All you had to say.
Shit, I might pick that if I had the choice for my last meal.
Bring some Popeyes. It'll work.
Nothing beats.
Or it's fine.
Nothing beats a chicken sandwich. I'm sorry, but.
Mm-hmm. Or the biscuits. Oh, so good.
So, you know, you did kind of talk about it earlier. I wanted to go back to it a little bit because you are going to Japan for a tour of Big Japan. You found a great deal of success in the deathmatch world. You were talking about, you know, like your style of deathmatch. It's, you know, different. I will say, like, there's a lot of stuff that you're doing that is not stuff that is like, the stuff that is commonly seen in the North American
scene. Like, yeah, a lot of like exposed boards, missing boards, like to the floor through the ring kind of shit is very, you know, it is very Japan inspired. So, but besides just Takeda, like, what is your, you know, like, what's your whole tour looking like, and who do you have kind of lined up for yourself already?
Right now, I know I'm resting Takeda on the 17th, and Chiquita first string, and on the 18th, I'm teaming with Remington Roar, and we're facing Takeda and his partner. I'm blanking, but we're facing the Crazy Lovers.
Yeah.
Then I'm there for another week, and I'm on three more shows, I believe. One I've been announced on. I don't know what I'm doing. One is a free show where I'm in a six-man tag with Baka Gaijin, which is, you know, in deathmatch history, that's pretty cool. I'm technically a part of Baka Gaijin now. But then I don't know the third thing. And, you know, if they said, hey, do you want to stay another week? I'd be like, let's go, bro. But that's right now. That's the whole spiel. I'm at a hotel. I'm gonna go hang out in the dojo. I'm gonna travel around a lot. I'm gonna go hang out with Mal from DDT because we became friends when we were in LA after that Circle Six show. We were just awesome. we just hung out and we vibe. And he was like, Strong Zero awaits you when I got announced for Japan. And I'm like, I'm gonna die. I'm training Strong Zero. I love Strong Zero. It's gonna murder me. But that's the original thing. You know, I'm not like signed to them or anything. But also the reception, I was very, very happy about, because I've never been to Japan. You know, I've never been to Japan, never been to Korea. I know I've got family in both places, but I've never ever interacted or met with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably never going to, because my mom doesn't really like that side of the family. It's a whole thing of like just inner family politics that I don't even want to try to get into, but she just told me it's messy at times. But being able to go there and seeing all these fans, like there's been a bunch of Japanese fans that have been messaging me. There's fans that have came to America and they went to like an ICW show when I was getting booked on them, and they brought me gifts and they're like, we came to see you. And I'm like, my ass? Mm-hmm. All the way from Japan? They're like, yeah. And I go, like, well, let me see if I have it. Oh yeah, this right here, it's a Kasai flag, and then they got me a Shiba Inu flag, and they're like, yeah, we came all the way to Japan to give you this. Wow. And we wanted to see your death match. Is incredible to me the fact that I'm getting all these messages from fans. They're tweeting, oh, Akira's coming. I'm like, you guys know who I am? It's insane to me. Like when I went to Prestige, I'd never been to Prestige before. And like, you can be like, oh, it's because you're humble. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. I'm just, this is how it is. I'll go to places I've never been, and when I get a reaction, I'm just surprised. Same time when I went to MLW for the first time and I came out, and people were just chanting my name. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm doing something right. Mm-hmm. Like when I came out to Prestige, I'd never been there before, but they were chanting my name from beginning to end. I'm like, it's insane. I remember I was in there, and I think it was either Envy Young or Sonica was just like, well, you're over. And I'm like, yay. but this fan reaction, it feels good, not just, you know, for the professional in me, because it's like, okay, my work has transcended international barriers. But more on a personal level, because where I came from, I was the only mixed kid. When I was young, I was from a Gamera movie, for God's sakes. I had a bowl cut, the whole nine yards, you know. I'd be like, oh, Gamera, save me, that kind of crap. Bad. Puberty hit me, then a little bit of the white kicked in. But I look more Asian than the rest of my family. Like, my brothers and my sister, they look white. but where I came from, there was, you know, nobody. I was the only minority kid for the longest time until, you know, like 7th or 8th grade, we brought other people in. But there was never like, you know, any other Asian kids. You know, I never really got to really interact with anybody like that. I didn't really get to explore that part of, you know, my culture. People were like, well, it's not really your culture. I'm like, it's still that part of me. My grandma is legitimately like, she came over here with my mom when they immigrated over here. Like, my grandma had like a bunch of Korean books, but like one or two Japanese books, like, And I could never really understand them because I was never taught to understand it. But once again, when you're not around, when you don't, you get, you know that feeling when you don't fit in. It's like you are the outsider. I felt like an outsider like all my life. Doesn't matter if I was in a group, in a club, you know, it was always like, he looks different. You know, I'd get called every slur in the book. You know, when my dad was a basketball coach, the basketball, like the varsity kids, and I was like a fourth grader, would give me shit and pick on me. And that's kind of when I started having more of a, you know, like a fuck you attitude that, you know, people didn't like, especially when I got into wrestling. I was very much a fuck you kind of guy. Like when I was younger and like people would call me like slurs and stuff, mind you, these guys are like 6'4", 6'5" playing basketball, and I'm a fourth grader. I'm at waist length. Oh shit. They talk shit. I dick punch them. I didn't care. I was like, you talk shit, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. I dick punch them. I choke the shit out of them. I remember one time, this dude, he was a younger brother, but he was older than me, of one of the kids in varsity. And my dad was coaching. I was sitting there just reading a book. They'd give me shit for reading books, for God's sake. So, you know, it was that kind of school environment. It sucked. And I turned away. This dude said something I can't really repeat on here, but, you know, it was a couple things. And I stopped and I turned, and in front of God and everybody, he turned away and was laughing with friends. And I just jumped up. I put him in a rear naked choke. And when they pulled me off, he was purple. And that, like, that's also kind of why when I got into wrestling, I was very, I guess, you know, not antagonistic, but I didn't take shit, and people didn't like that because I was so used to getting shit on from everybody. When I went to a Christian college, for God's sakes, and I still got that same kind of treatment because I was the metal guy. I was, you know, I spiked my hair, I got piercings, I hung out with, you know, people that they would consider unsavory. And it just reflects on that. But now I'm at the point where in pro wrestling, I have people that I look a bit more like me. They acknowledge me. When I was younger, I didn't like who I was. You know, I used to hate being Asian. I used to curse out God. You know, I was a bitter, bitter kid. Because I was like, why am I the only one? Like, why don't I look like my siblings? Why don't, you know, like, why am I by myself? And then I kind of grew up, I got into wrestling, and I picked the name Akira because that was a character when I was like five. I would write books, you know, like little books. I'd draw the pictures or whatever. I wanted to make like my own Dragon Ball Z kind of books. And they'd be like some insane stuff. I think I found one when I was like 3 years ago. And I was like, what was I on when I was writing this kind of crap? It's like Dragon Ball Z ripoff, but like, I was like, I didn't do cocaine when I was five. Where was this coming from? But I look at it, and that was always the character's name, though, was Akira. And I took that because I was like, it's personal to me. It wasn't from the anime. It helps in terms of marketing and in terms of names. But then I got into wrestling, and people would be like, oh, well, you're white, you're this, you're that. And I'm like, motherfuckers, am I white? Am I all these racial slurs, or am I this? Pick one. But it was great. It's always gratifying when I go to, you know, when I see Rina Yamashita, she goes, Akira, hugs me. We talk. Toru, when he's over, same thing. Japanese fans, other Japanese wrestlers, they see me, they sit there and they talk with me, and I'm one of them. They don't question it. They see it. I think when I did the New Japan Dojo in my first year, when I didn't know anything about working, actually knowing how to work, but I got my entire style from training that whole week with Shibata. Tiger Hattori was there, and he said, ah, you're mixed. And I go, what? What? He goes, Korean, me Japanese. He's like, but white too, right? I go, yeah. He goes, ah, my grandkids like that. And I go, I almost shit a brick. I was like, this is the guy. This is Tiger Hattori. I used to watch like old New Japan tapes, and I'd watch this guy ref, and he saw it, you know. So now I'm not worried so much about what other people think about me, because the people I truly care about the most, you know, and I want to represent, see it. You know, like people like Kid Bandit, Ref Gina, Kevin Koo. Every time we're together, we're like, oh, Asian people, what's up? How's it going, guys? Because there's not many of us at wrestling shows. We'll take pictures and stuff. And seeing this fan reaction, like it, I get emotional every time. Like when Masha went over for GCW in Japan and they were selling merchandise, she's like, yo, there was fans that were wearing your stuff. And I just,
it's rad.
It doesn't feel real, you know? The people that, you know, you want to be in front of the most, it doesn't feel real when they talk to you and when they message you or when they wear your stuff and they ask where you're at or how you're doing. And you hear it from other people who aren't going to lie to you about it. It's a different feeling. So I'm very excited to get there and show them who I am and bare my soul to them and bleed everywhere. And I'm going to put myself through hell for this match. I don't care. Like, if there's a time to go out in the ring, and despite an injury that could happen, this is the time to do it. Because I don't want to go there and just, oh, you know, some people go there and it's like, oh, I'm in Japan. I'm happy to be here. I made it. This is it. I don't want to be just that guy. I want to be the guy that goes back every other month, you know, whether it's for Big Japan or any other promotion. Because I go for Big Japan, you know, we could branch off into another thing entirely. Yeah. And just the fact that there's fans that are buying tickets specifically to see me is, once again, it's a level of gratification to everything I've done in 5 years that I have not felt in all of 5 years until now, actually.
Absolutely. So before we wrap things up, you've mentioned her a few times, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about her. I happen to see your first MLW middleweight title defense here at a show you referenced earlier here in my hometown, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrestle Masha for the middleweight title. Awesome. Yes. Match, amazing grappling. I was just sitting there going ooh, the whole time. But we got to spend some time together after the show, and it was a short time, but you guys were very fun to be around. And besides having one of the best wrestlers in the world, you know, to kind of train with and journey through wrestling with itself, you know, like how does Masha enhance life outside of just wrestling?
God, I mean, if you just looked at my Instagram, you see the way I was dressed before I moved to New York. That's all you gotta say, man. Like,
there you go.
Yeah, look at my hair. Look at the way I'm dressed. Look at how I look.
Did she pick out the Fury Road fit?
No, that was me.
Oh, okay. Okay. That was a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Ricky hated it. I looked at him and I said, Ricky, you're white and you're from Ohio. You're going to hate it. And he just looked at me like, that may be true. Mm-hmm. But Fatu saw it, Alex Kane, all of Beaumier. They're like, ooh, you look good, boy. They're like, mm-hmm. You look good. And I'm like, hell yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
But she's enhanced my life in terms of, I guess, on a professional level, in terms of a physical level. Spiritual, emotional, the whole nine yards. I'm not the person I was a year ago. I'm not the person I was a year and a half ago. You know, we're going on 2 years of being in a relationship this year, and we've been friends for three. Like, we became friends when I jumped off the roof. That's how we met, was through that. I jumped off the roof with light tubes, boom, it trended worldwide, and she saw it when she was in Japan, and we just, you know, linked up from there. We're just friends. But like, in terms of the way I dress, the way in terms of you wrestling, coaching, everything in general, she's changed my life for the better. And I do my best because she is one of the best in the world. You know, I have a lot to, you know, to live up to as well as being in this and picking another. And I'd like to, you know, the past year and a half was a little bit harder. You know, I have good matches, some great matches. But these past couple months, I feel like I'm hitting that stride of being on an equal wavelength. You know, we're on two different promotions, but we're two of the standouts from our promotions. Mm-hmm. And I'd say we get a reaction everywhere we go, you know. It's a lot. It's hard. It's a nuanced thing. It's not a simple black or white answer. But even in the ring, I think we push each other whether we want to or not. We did that CFU match, and it was in a cage, and people were expecting us, you know, just to grapple. But when I started, you know, trying to pride stomp her face in, people got uncomfortable, and I said, "That's how we are. You know, it's no holds barred in the ring and at home. It's all about honesty."
And Masha's definitely not going to hold back ever. No.
But once again, people would expect, you know, the boyfriend to kind of hold back. And I said, that's not who I am. You know, I'm a very nice person. You know, I'm very cordial. But when you get in the ring with me, I'm going to hit you. I'm going to kick you. I'm going to stab you. I don't care. Like, it's the blinders are off. Like, you saw in the match for Courage Pro. Yeah. I didn't pull back. I was kicking the piss out of her just as much as she was kicking the piss out of me. And I might have put her through a little bit of hell. Hell, she made me bleed in that match.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. She also had wrist control on you for like a solid 3 minutes. But anyway.
Yeah, then I started beating this guy. Don't relax. I dropped on her head. Relax. Okay.
You did walk out of there with the belt still. It was your first defense. Mm-hmm.
It was. And I'm happy she was my first defense. Like, when I asked Court, I literally prefaced it as this. I was like, listen, this is not me saying I want to defend it against my girlfriend. I'm saying this is me defending it against someone who is consistently relevant. This is someone who is becoming more and more and more relevant. And this belt needs that, because this belt needs to be held along the lines, along the same standards of when MJF held it. And people cared more about the middleweight belt than they did the world heavyweight belt. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. And I said, she's one of the best in the world. It'd be stupid to not do this. I don't care if it's, it's intergender. It's like, she's one of the best regardless of that.
Yep.
I don't view wrestling in terms of, I don't care who you are. Like, when her and I tagged against our now students, Cosmic and Remembrand, they weren't my students. But I got in there with Cosmic, and I beat the shit out of her. Like, I chopped the sword, and I saw her go, oh, shit. And I'm like, I'm not pulling this shit. I wouldn't do it with her. I wouldn't do it with anybody, because it's disrespectful. I wouldn't want to be treated that way, no matter who I was. If I'm in the maid outfit and someone's like, look, I don't want to hit you. And I'm like, well, one, motherfucker, you don't know who you're fucking with if you don't know who the fuck I am. But two, I'm going to knock the shit out of you. But she put me on even more of an understanding of what great women's wrestling can be and should be. You know, people have said it before, and I'll say it, she's the standard of what a women's wrestler should be. Like, in terms of the United States, or hell, even, you know, just the West in general, she's, like, nigh untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter, and that's as a woman and as a wrestler on her own. You know, you put her with other guys, she's better than all the guys. People should aspire to be like that, you know. I know people can be, like, once again, like, people can, like, want to be a 40-miler or do whatever. People can like diva wrestling. That's cool. Good for them. But it's a matter, I guess, of, you know, people say there's no such thing as good taste, or you can't, or people say you have to cultivate good taste. That's the same thing for wrestling, you know? Like, you can like kind of, people can like 90s garbage shit. They can like, you know, WCW 2000 and say, it's entertaining. Okay, it's entertaining, which is true. I've watched it. It's hilarious. But it's not artistically good. You know, like, there's artistic merit in things, there's levels to things. And I'm tired of just saying, oh, because it's someone's art, it's inherently good. And I'm like, that's not the case. I'm sorry. If everyone's art was inherently good, everything, it would all be in the Museum of Modern Art. But
right. That's
just not how it is. You watch her, you watch people like Charlie Evans, you watch people who are actually just on an elite level of athlete and professional wrestler level. And I'm like, that's who you should try to be, you know? Chris Statlander is another one. You should try to be like Chris Statlander. Ruby Soho is another one, you know? Like, set your goal. It's not saying set your goals. Set your standards for yourself higher. Because I remember I had a student who was like, oh, I maybe want to be just a champion at my local company. And I'm like, that. And I went to him, I was like, that's it? He's like, I don't think I could be anything else. I said, that right there is why you can't, because you just set the limit for yourself. Like, when I started wrestling, I didn't say I'm going to be signed MLW. I'm going to go to Japan. I said, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to pour my heart into it, and I will see what comes out of it. I didn't set a glass ceiling for myself, but I also came in knowing this is a very competitive field. Who knows what's going to come out of it? But I guess I did say one thing. I said, I'm going to be somebody. And you can be somebody and be signed to either a multi-million dollar contract, or you can be somebody and be, you know, a jobber on Raw, but you're still making a living. Either way, you're paying the bills and you're living a good life. You know, I came into wrestling. I just said, I want to be as good as I can be. I'm going to be somebody. And
Huh? Oh, I don't know who froze there. Literally, none of us moved to the point where I thought my whole computer had froze.
I'm still here.
Okay.
We're still here.
Okay. Well, we're still here. Akira is sort of here.
Somewhere in the...
That was trippy. That was trippy, Hab guy. Also, shout out Hab guy. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
See Hab guy in my friend's Twitch a lot.
Oh, there I am.
Hey, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
Being with Masha has opened my eyes to realizing the kind of position that I want to be in wrestling as well of... You know, I'm not just some random person. I can be someone of, you know, kind, I guess, like influence, someone that people can come to and talk about wrestling about. Because I sat there with the students. We're doing all the roles, we're doing drills. I sat them all down. I said, what do you want to do with your life in pro wrestling? And they all looked like lost because it was more like a guidance counselor session than a coaching session.
Mm-hmm.
But I told them, I said, I feel like this is the stuff that needs to be talked about because has any of the coaches ever asked you that, you know, on a personal level? It's opened my eyes to just being the kind of person I can be to other people, you know, just through being in a relationship with her. And just through being, you know, her partner and being, you know, her tag partner and navigating this business with each other. She's done so much, you know, but by her doing so much for me, she's doing stuff for other people. It's a crazy nuanced thing that not everyone gets to experience.
Oh yeah. Well, you talked about wanting to be somebody, and I think you're well on your way there, Akira.
Definitely.
I'm trying. I never want to say like I don't want to be that ego. Just be like I am the guy.
But you got to be proud of yourself at the same time.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I never want to fall to my own hubris. I don't want to have an ego. But I can safely say I'm doing things that people said I could never do. Yeah. And you know, it just even going back to like when. You know who was talking to me like on the Observer or wore my shirt and all that other crap. I realized it because something like Kid Bandit even said, he's like, Kid Bandit was like, he didn't do that for no reason. People see something in you, maybe own it for once instead of just being, you know, the guy like, it's whatever. He's like, she said, own who you are. People talk about you, whether you realize it or not. And this is a year where I said, I'm going to start owning it. That's it. Own who you are. That's the theme of this year. Own who you are and grow from it. Because if you don't own who you are, you can never rise above what you are.
Absolutely. Say it, but also be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that note, I don't think there's a better message we could wrap up with.
Right.
So, Akira, before we do head out, you know, where can everyone find you? Plug all your shit. Let them know, let them know where they can follow you.
Well, if you look at the little graphic where it says Akira under it, it says at the Akira Way. That's not just a Twitter, Instagram, Twitch tagline, which it is. That's where you can find me. Mm-hmm. It's also just the way of how I live my life. And I'm truly doing that now to this day. I live my life by my way. I live my life by the Akira way. You'll find me on Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, other websites. That's where you're going to find me. You can buy all my merch at like either stiffblade.com or deathsamurai.com. I got more t-shirts, more stuff coming out. finally getting them out, and I'll have a lot more when I come back from Japan, definitely.
Good, but, I can get an good. I can update this one and get something fresh. Dude,
that's the OG. That's the OG. That's a Redneck Kung Fu shirt. Redneck Kung Fu, by the way, is the best t-shirt designer. That's not Sayazawa. But also, fun fact. So she's another one. When I did the Maid Kira thing, she was like, "Yeah, I'm scrolling through Twitter and." I stop and go, who's this pretty girl? That's Akira. And I'm like, that's
amazing.
And she's like, she was like, well, that's my sexual confusion for the day. And I'm like, aces. That's what I want to do. I want to confuse and lose people and wonder at what the fuck I'm doing.
Awakenings have been had this week for sure.
Yes.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today, Akira. Before we head out, Reg, where can everyone find you?
At Righteous Reg on all your socials. Every Saturday, I'm with Philip Lindsay on the Grab City Podcast. Every Wednesday, I'm here with Mike on Indeed, talking all the best independent wrestling, wrestlers, referees, everything you can do surrounding independent wrestling. Also on Wednesdays, I'm live with Denise on the AEW Dynamite post show. Thursdays, every other Thursdays, Ask Grab City and the post show of Ring of Honor with Kate. There's probably some other things, but you know where to find me.
Oh, thank God you don't have to deal with Sean Ross.
he's up there. I'm dealing with Sean. He's up there.
He's around somewhere.
He's up there.
And then, of course, myself, every Sunday, you can find me over on Love Wrestling on the Brunch Gimmick. Shout out to them because they just announced today that they're going to be bringing independent wrestling for the first time ever to the Edmonton Oil Kings home of Rogers Place.
Awesome.
Big ass arena. There's going to be a big ass Love Pro Wrestling show. So congratulations to Love Wrestling. I'm on there every Sunday at 1 o'clock on the Brunch Gimmick, just talking bullshit. And every Wednesday here, Indeed, my favorite place in the whole wide world. Next week, Mark Polisell, promoter, owner, booker of C4 Wrestling, is joining us. I'm going out there on Friday for the season premiere. Get to see Titus Alexander from West Coast Pro Wrestle for the first time. Oh my fucking God.
Camp is here.
I'm happy. Yeah.
Watch the someone on their dome.
Definitely.
I can't. Oh man, I can't wait. It's I've been wanting to get out to C4 for like years. It is the first promotion I ever talked about on this show.
C4 rules.
So it's and also I think Mark is going to be our first two-time guest.
Oh,
so two-time. Yeah, all the love for Canada and C4. Maybe a little bias on my part, but follow me on all my socials. It's right there under my name. We'll see you next Wednesday. Support your favorite independent wrestler. Support your favorite independent promotions. Go to shows. Buy merch. And don't be an asshole. Just love everybody. Be fucking nice. Bye.
Yes.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.